You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. Get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, or Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked On, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game, it's very important, Millie.
Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making this part of your daily routine, whatever it is that you're doing, wherever you're going to work, coming home from work, going to the gym, whatever it is. Thanks for bringing us along and making us part of your day. We are the Rainy Jays. John Corrales from RedsArmy.com and Boston.com. Jay King from MassLive.com, doing great work there. And today we are talking about a couple of things that appeared in the local print. Marcus Smart talking to the Globe's Adam Himmelsbach about sitting and watching, and the sitting and watching driving him insane as he recovers from a thumb injury.
And that's a direct quote.
And that's a direct quote. And oh, so much fun out in Utah ahead of the game against the Jazz. Mr. Gordon Monson of the Salt Lake Tribune, just a vicious hit piece on Gordon Hayward out of nowhere. Off the top rope, basically saying, we're not mad, we're actually laughing. Us and our hot wives, we're laughing about this whole thing. So we'll talk about all of that on today's program. Why don't we just start with that, Jay? This was kind of really weird. It's just weird. He compares Hayward's ankle injury, first of all, to Bugs Bunny and Yosemite Sam. And then proceeds to rip Hayward a new one and saying, no, we're better without you.
Yeah, it was – I didn't think the column actually deserved as much heat as it got. Like, I don't think I've seen a column in a long time actually get as much heat as that one did. So I don't know whether it deserved all the hate it got. It was definitely not what I would have written if I were a Utah Jazz writer. The one thing that Jazz writers keep bringing up and just makes no sense to me is that he should have helped them win the deal on the way out. What was he supposed to do? Was he really supposed to force the Celtics into a sign-and-trade? Was he really supposed to diminish the team he was deciding to join because they had a brighter future? Was that what he was supposed to do? Like, if one of us leaves our job, do we demand that the place we're going to sends back a good worker to the other place? Like, no, it's just not how life works. It's not how anything works. So that part was weird to me. And then the whole part about how the Hayward wasn't a big part of what the Jazz were doing was just stupid. Like, come on, man. I didn't think it was quite as bad as a lot of people made it out to be, but it wasn't right. It wasn't a good column. It wasn't smart or intelligent or particularly well written. It didn't need to be written.
No, it did not need to be written. I think it started with the tweet that the Tribune Sports Twitter account put out, which said, "Dear Gordon Hayward, the Utah Jazz are doing just fine without you. Rudy Gobert is a stud, and Donovan Mitchell is going to be a star, probably bigger than you. You're not missed. Sincerely, Gordon Monson." Like, that was the tweet itself.
Yeah, I think the tweet made it a lot worse.
Incendiary. That made it like, because you know how Twitter blows things up. That tweet was basically a big, fuck you, Gordon Hayward. Look how good we are. We don't need you. We're better without you. So the tweet was much worse than
yeah,
the column.
The tweet made it a lot worse.
Bad. Yeah, the tweet made it a million times worse. And because Twitter is Twitter, when you've got a tweet that's that bad, people are going to react immediately to that. And then people are going to start getting their jokes off because that's how it works. And that was a great setup for a lot of Twitter jokes. So that really is why things spiral out of control. If you read the piece...
It wasn't that much, like, as far as hatchet pieces go, it wasn't the worst at all I've ever read. And honestly, like, the way Hayward left, yes, he went to a place where I don't think you could fault him for choosing Boston. Obviously, Boston has a great situation. Boston has a lot of talent. Boston, even without him, is probably going to win 55-plus games and be the number two or one seed or whatever they get. You can't fault him for that. But I do think the way he left and the way especially the last day of his decision went with the report early in the day that he chose Boston and then like 6 hours or whatever it was of nothingness, I do think that was handled poorly. And maybe that wasn't on him, but it certainly looked like it was on him. And he had made his decision, and he just wanted to release this Players Tribune piece, which is understandable. But when you're leaving teams in limbo, when you're leaving everybody in limbo, it's just a tough thing. You don't want to do that. So I do think there are parts of his departure that were really handled poorly. And I understand why some Jazz fans and columnists or whoever would be salty about that. But the article, it went over the top. I mean, it definitely went over the top. But honestly, it wasn't the most over-the-top thing I've ever read. I wasn't too bothered by the column itself. Like I didn't think it was that bad.
The column itself, like I said, the tweet was much worse than the column. The column was garbage, but you probably find a Shaughnessy piece that's hotter garbage than that probably 5-6 times a year. But that's still, I agree with you. The notion that they say, and this is the passage that is what you were talking about, where he said it could have been handled so much better by him, handled in a manner by which he still could have left to play for his college coach and simultaneously eased the departure for his former team by helping it win in the deal too. He says that Hayward ducked down a back alley to Boston. This is when you talk about people who really have little concept of the inner workings, either it's one of two things. Either they have little concept of how the NBA works, or he's being purposely inflammatory to play directly into a rabid fan base. Because the idea, like you said, that he would basically force the Celtics to give up players that he wants to play with. You're leaving the Jazz to go to Boston. What? If it was reversed, if he was leaving Boston to go to the Jazz, why would he say, oh, let's force a deal here to get rid of players that will help me? I'm leaving in part to go win.
When has anyone in history ever done that? It's literally...
Well, Chris Paul.
Well, Chris Paul had to because the Rockets didn't have cap space.
That's true.
The Celtics had ways to get cap space. Like, it wasn't a thing where it was possible to force this. It was not happening, no matter what. So, and it's never happened before. It's not something that literally, to my knowledge, has ever happened, where a star forced a team into a sign and trade while the other team had cap space. And that to me is just weird when people think that he should have done that. That's bizarre to me. There were other parts of the column that I don't agree with, but whatever. Like it's a salty columnist. Like I could see Shaughnessy writing something like that. I could see some other columnist in some other city writing that. I didn't think the column itself was like too egregious. It wasn't right. It wasn't great, but it wasn't too egregious.
Again, we've seen worse. So that's that. That was fun for a while on Twitter. Before we move on to Marcus Smart, I would like to remind everybody and kind of help the network make an announcement. Remind everybody that there are other Locked On podcasts. There's for other sports. If you are a fan of the NFL, or if you're a fan of the Patriots, if you're a Boston person, Locked On, all of your tastes, if you, whatever fan you are, whatever team you're a fan of, and now they're expanding into Major League Baseball. So the network is expanding into MLB. So start looking for your favorite MLB team if you want to follow a Locked On podcast. So search for that on wherever you get your podcast, wherever you found us. Go ahead, search for your favorite NFL team, and slowly but surely we will have every baseball team covered as well. All right, Marcus Smart talking to Adam Himmelsbach about just going completely insane without the ability to play basketball. He said in the Globe today, you know, you go to the gym, you walk in, and really that's it. I don't put a jersey, don't do any of that. So I've been doing that my whole life, so it does drive me a little crazy. But bigger picture, my time is going to come. So, and he, in this piece, he says he's targeting, hopefully, the second round of the playoffs. So that's good. A little bit of an update that he is hopefully will, if the Celtics can indeed get by a first-round opponent, that we can hopefully have Marcus Smart and Kyrie Irving back to start that second round.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be
that would help.
Two good guys to have. It's interesting because I think Brad Stevens now has more decisions to make lineup wise once those guys do return, because the way Terry Rozier has played, I think he's played himself into the conversation of being in the closing unit, right? Like, it's typically been like Kyrie and Smart, some combination of Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Marcus Morris, and Al Horford. But Rozier, I think the way he's played, the way he's shot the basketball, the way he's defended, the way he's rebounded, you've got to at least think in some circumstances, in some matchups, that he's going to factor into Brad Stevens' decision-making. So once Smart gets back, they'll kind of have like, what, seven guys who could potentially be in that closing lineup. So Kyrie and Horford will be, obviously. And then it's Rozier, Smart, Tatum, and Brown for the other three, and Morris for the other three spots. Who would you have in your closing lineup most nights?
My closing lineup would be, I would put Smart back out there, and I think I'm going to go with Tatum and Jaylen Brown. I think those guys, and I think that's going to give the Celtics that maximum switchability. And I understand what Terry Rozier has been doing, and Morris has obviously been huge. I think those guys can be the guys that carry the team to start the fourth quarter and get the Celtics in position to put Kyrie and whomever else back in the game. But to close, obviously Kyrie and Horford, like you said, Smart, Tatum, and Brown give you the ability to switch everything with their length and with their athleticism. And Smart's the guy that can, if you get some sort of cross matchup against a big, it's not going to kill you, because we've seen guys can't post up Marcus Smart. He'll find a way to, even if he gets a big on him, make a play, where I don't think Rozier is able to do that. So I think I'm going to go with that Horford, Kyrie, Smart, Jaylen, and Tatum. And the only caveat would be if Tatum, for some reason, gets that, like, I don't know, rookie deer in the headlights, if he can't quite handle the moment, the playoff moment, then maybe at that point I'd go with Marcus Morris, because he just doesn't give a shit.
I don't feel like Tatum will give a shit either. Like,
I don't think so either, but, you know, he's a rookie and you don't know.
Yeah, I'll give you that. But everything he's shown so far, suggests that he'll be poised and he'll be confident and he'll be ready. He hasn't done one thing all season to suggest that he'll be afraid of the moment or shy away from the moment or at all be unsure of himself in any situation. Maybe like the first 5 minutes he played against LeBron in his very first game. But after that, it's just been like pretty smooth considering the fact that he's a 19, 20-year-old rookie. But I do think there are going to be options. I think it'll depend on the team. I think sometimes you might want to have speed out there. Terry Rozier just burns people. And like, let's say they're playing the Cavs and the Cavs have, you know, like Rodney Hood at the two, like throw Terry Rozier out there. He can guard Rodney Hood, but can Rodney Hood guard him? I don't know. So speed will be something. And then it's going to be weird, man. Because oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you got it. You got it.
What, to your point, I think what Rozier and Morris do give the Celtics is the ability to kind of roll with a lineup that, you know what I mean? Like, if you're in the middle of the fourth quarter and it's working, you don't feel the need to go with other players. Like, if Smart and Jaylen Brown are for some reason on the bench and the Celtics are making a comeback or extending a lead, you can just roll with that lineup. And that's, I think, where that Rozier and Morris thing really help the Celtics and give other options. You can close with them. If it's working and someone else just sits, then you can just turn to Marcus and say, hey, man, we're just going to ride this wave. You take a rest, or whomever is on the bench, you can rest and you feel comfortable with those guys, as opposed to maybe in the past where you say, all right, this is working for now, but let's get these other guys in and let's make sure we can close the deal. I feel comfortable with these guys closing the deal if they've got it rolling.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. And then Brad never goes big. Brad will never – I don't think he'll trust Aaron Baines or Greg Monroe in big moments, because when it gets to it, Brad always wants to be able to switch and have versatile, smaller lineups. It's just what he's always done. So, I mean, theoretically, he could try to play offense defense and have Baines in there for some defensive possessions. He could try to use Monroe in some situations where Monroe might be helpful, but – I don't see him trusting a big dude. I am looking forward to seeing what the playoff rotation will be, because especially before Kyrie and Smart get back, it feels like the Celtics might have to cut things down. Like, I don't think you'll see too much Abdul Nader. I don't think you'll see too much Semi Ojeleye.
No.
I think it'll be just... I mean, if Rozier is still starting for Kyrie Irving, it'll probably be like Marcus Morris and who off the
Greg
bench?
Monroe.
Greg Monroe.
Greg Monroe.
And who?
I mean, that might be it. I mean, really, you might see some spot Semi Ojeleye just to see if you need him defensively. But I don't think so. Shane Larkin.
Yeah, Shane Larkin too.
Yeah,
I can't believe we just forgot Shane. I'm sorry, Shane, man.
I know. It's how it goes sometimes. So Shane Larkin would definitely he trusts Shane, and Shane's been a nice spark.
Yeah,
it's just kind of worked for him. So I think that works as far as and maybe there might be some nights where Monroe doesn't get any burn. But I don't think you go any further than that.
Yeah.
Sorry, Abdul Nader.
I think Ojeleye could play some, like the right matchup. I think they might throw Ojeleye out there, go a little smaller, see what they could do with that. But yeah, we'll maybe. See. It's too bad they don't have a full roster, because with a full roster, Brad would have a lot of options. Like, he would really have a lot of options, but Kyrie being out and Smart being out and Tice being out really limits some of the things he can do and try. Like even the point Horford lineup, which they only tried because they were totally out of guards one night, and they were like, yeah, whatever, we'll run Al Horford at point. That could kind of be a neat lineup, like for a playoff situation. If you threw out Horford, Tatum, Brown, Morris, and Smart, or you know, like that could be, or Ojale, throw Ojale out there maybe. That could be fun. But
that would be wild in the first round of the playoffs.
You'd have to
out there against the Heat.
You'd have to get so many stops, because I don't think that group is scoring too much. But who knows? Maybe they will. Point Horford. But yeah, there's just so many things Brad could have done with a full roster that he won't be able to do because they're beaten up.
Well, we'll see, because Kyrie could still come back in the middle of the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah. But
that three week, if everything goes right and he heals quickly, that's 3 weeks is day one of the first round. Now, I know that Brad Stevens has said that's like the beginning of when he's supposed to get back to basketball-related activities, so he may not be ready to play, but you know how the playoffs are spaced out. He might miss the first couple of games, and depending on how that goes, if the Celtics win those first couple of games, they might just let Kyrie kind of slowly work his way back, but it's possible he can make it back in the middle of the first round and at least play under a minutes restriction to get himself ready for the second round. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I would be surprised if the Celtics get into the second round of the playoffs where Marcus Smart is back and healthy, Kyrie is back and healthy. And the good thing about his knee is it's structurally sound, and that thing that they removed, the guitar string from his knee, was the thing that was causing the irritation. So everything should be fine. It's just a matter of recovering from the procedure. So that's all good news. He's just got to make sure that thing is healed and he could be back. So that second round series, whatever it is, I think they could be in a good spot there. So it sucks. That Tice thing really sucks. It takes away a nice option to throw at teams, a nice athletic big that really could help off the bench. But that's the thing that really sucks, because he's an underrated key to what the Celtics were doing.
Yeah, but before we move on, I do want to highlight just how strong Marcus Smart's quotes about not playing were.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is to Adam Himmelsbach of the Boston Globe. It drives me insane. You get to the gym, walk in, and really that's it. I don't put on a jersey and don't do any of that. Like I just see him just sitting there in the locker room, like just brooding.
Seething.
Yeah, just like making a kill list for when he returns. Marcus Smart, that is one competitive dude. And when you take his competitive juices away and you make him watch his team instead of playing, it hurts him, man. It's funny because he's not always the greatest quote for reporters, but in times of like being passionate about winning or competing or anything like that, he just has this edge to him, and you can see it in the things he says. I mean, it drives me insane. Yeah, I believe him, man. I don't think he's exaggerating.
Yeah. But look, even you talk about his competitiveness. They said, you know, so he's got a smaller splint on, and he said there's a smaller hole at the top for thumb movement. They said so he's able to do some like thumb exercises, and they asked him what that included. He smiles and just wiggles his thumb slightly. And then he says, I try to play the game a little bit with it, you know, that movement when you try to do video games. So he's like just a little thumb hole at the top where he can wiggle his thumb a little bit. He's like, I try to play a game with that. Like, he's competitive enough where, like, even that is a game to him, and he's trying to, like, win that. So, I don't know. That's Marcus. And he's still
classic Marcus Smart.
He's still going to dive. He still doesn't matter. He's not scared off of that shit. He's still going to go Superman for loose balls. It is what it is.
Yeah.
That's Marcus Smart.
Classic. Classic Marcus Smart.
Before we wrap up, let's just do a quick little run through, because just standings wise, there are a couple of things that could impact the Celtics. We're recording after, so the Wizards beat San Antonio, so they were in danger of falling into that seventh spot. They are holding on strong at six. I do not want to see the Wizards in seventh. The Heat right now are beating the Cavaliers with just under 8 minutes to go, and they're up 14. And then Milwaukee plays the Clippers later on tonight, the last game on TNT. Milwaukee is a half game up on Miami for the seventh seed. So if Miami holds on, they will move into a tie percentage points ahead of the Milwaukee Bucks. And the Bucks, if they lose, would fall behind into the eighth spot. So lots of playoff implications going on tonight in the NBA.
Playoff implications. If any of you just heard the closing song from Millie's, I am deeply sorry. It somehow started playing on my computer, and I may or may not have recorded it. I'm not 100% sure if it was recording.
I didn't hear it.
I could hear it in my ears, so we'll see. We'll see if the people heard it. I'm grateful for you guys because because you should want to hear that more often, my man Millie's.
Well, you might as well play it now because I think we're done with the show anyway.
I'd have to agree.
If you are not a subscriber, we hope you've enjoyed this show enough to become one. Go search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. If you are a subscriber, you know what we're looking for, that 5-star rating that just fulfills us, fulfills our souls to the core. And leave a 5-star review, leave a good review, let the people know that they should be listening to us. We are the Locked On Celtics Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast.
Yeah, Jay King and John Corrales.